for what purpose? Is that over?
Start over?
Yeah.
I'm just rehearsing.
Think and ask yourself, why did I come here today? We come to a hot room for what? We could have gone swimming, bowling. We could be home watching TV. But something motivated us to come here. What? Ask yourself. There's a mysterious power that motivates people to do what they do. Some people are motivated to go to a house of ill repute. Some people are motivated to go to the movies. Some people are motivated to go to spiritual meetings. What causes this? Who makes this happen? We can say God does it. But of course, God is within yourself. And some of the things you do, you would never allow God to make you do that. If God is yourself. So we have to say it's your karma. It's your karma that motivates you to come here, to go anywhere else. When you come to a meeting like this, you can rest assured that you've been working on yourself in past lives. You've been practicing for many lifetimes. Remember, this is not a church, and this is not a teaching. This is a confession of reality. Whenever I use the pronoun I, I'm not referring to myself. I'm referring to I am. So when I refer to my confession, I'm referring to our confession, omnipresence. Remember, whenever I use the word I, it means omnipresence. So, I am here to confess of absolute reality, of being unborn, of ultimate oneness, of pure intelligence, of emptiness, of nirvana. I confess all these things for you. Let's ponder these things as we meditate together. If you truly want to repent, just sit in silent meditation and see the perfect reality within. For all manners of error merely arise in erroneous thought, and like the morning dew before the rising sun, can perfectly be eliminated through the benevolent light and wisdom. Om Shanti, peace, peace. When we meditate like this, it's for the purpose of emptying the mind. The mind is like a garbage can. It's full of preconceived ideas, thoughts, concepts. Not only from this life, but from previous lives. There's a lot of stuff in that mind. In truth, there is no mind. But as long as you are expressing concepts, ideas, opinions, then we talk of a mind. As you sit in the silent meditation, and you watch your thoughts, observe how they come and they go. Observe the kind of thoughts that come to you. We do not try to change them. We do not repeat affirmations. You merely watch the thoughts. And they leave of their own accord. This is how you deal with your mind. You observe your thoughts. You become the witness to your thoughts. Or you ask yourself, to whom do these thoughts come? One or the other. If you do this often enough, the day is going to come when you become totally free and you realize and understand what I mean when I say you are unborn. You are nirvana, emptiness. What do I mean when I say you are unborn? Now the opinions I express to you does not have to be accepted. Remember, I am speaking to myself. I am is speaking. And I am is the infinite. The absolute reality. And I tell you in truth, I am unborn. Everything is unborn. Take a tree, for instance. What gave birth to a tree? A seed. Where did the seed come from? Another tree. Where does the tree come from? Another seed. And you go back like that. There's no answer. No validity. Take, for instance, creatures. Worms. Cockroaches. Bugs. Who gave them birth originally? Where did they come from? Flowers. The moon. The sun. The earth, the stars, human beings, ideas, intuition, discrimination. I tell you, none of these things exist. Nothing has ever been born. It is a false premise you believe in. Changing bad to good, wanting positive experiences. It's all nonsense. The reason you don't want a positive experience is because you never had a negative experience. There is no birth. What gave anything birth? Where did it come from? Do you know what anything is? You have no idea what anything at all is. You just give it a name. For instance, a cat. What is a cat? You have no idea. It was here when you came into existence. And we call it a cat. Why don't we call it a tree? We call it a cat. We give everything a name. That's the first mistake. Because no thing is where it appears to be. Therefore, the first rule of the true spiritual path is called divine ignorance. Divine ignorance. You have no idea what anything is. You just assume to know. You want to act intelligent, to imagine you know something. So you study harder to learn relative existence. But what you don't realize is you're sending yourself right into the grave. You'll learn and you'll study and you'll become something as it appears. And you'll get older and older and older. And before you die, you'll wonder what anything is all about. You have no idea what anything at all is. But I tell you again, everything is unborn. Nothing actually exists. The only explanation is, it's like a dream. When you have a dream, do you give birth to everything? The dream just begins with everything as it appears. You do not go to a beginning or to an end. A dream just starts from nothing. And it goes on until you awaken. The waking state is called the mortal dream. We're dreaming the mortal dream. All of the things that you're interested in, all of your fears, all of your frustrations, goods and bads, all of your happiness, sads, it's all a dream. And the more you get attached to it, the more human you become. It's like getting attached to a dream and never waking up. And you keep living the dream. Consequently, you create your own reincarnation because you are attached to person, place, and thing. And this pulls you back into a body over and over and over again until you learn to let go. Until you start practicing emptiness. Remember, there is no being and there's no non-being. There's no birth and there's no death. Just knowing this brings you a semblance of peace. Just thinking of these things makes you happy. But it is beyond human happiness. It is beyond human peace. It is beyond laughter. Laughter is when the body is happy over something. When you realize there is no body, where is the laughter? Where is the crying? Where is being impersonal come in? None of those things exist. Therefore, you ask the question, well, do I exist? You have to ask yourself, what do I mean by I? Do I exist as a human being? As a reacting mechanism? As a person who gets turned on and turned off? That is a false concept. It is called false imagination. You imagine a world populated by insects, trees, the moon, the sun, human beings, and everything else that appears to exist. And you have discrimination. You like this. You hate this. You enjoy this. You despise that. But I say to you, you must go beyond these concepts if you wish to be free. Just imagine how peaceful you feel when your mind stops thinking, stops trying to change conditions. Stops trying to get even, to fight for your rights. What rights? You have no rights. As a human being, you have rights. And you'll always have to fight for them. For it will appear as if somebody's trying to take them away. But in reality, there are no rights. There's nothing to stick up for. You may ask, well, what do I become? Nothing? No. Emptiness is not no thing. It is called emptiness because it means nothing exists as it appears. But there is something. A mysterious power that is an embodiment of love, compassion, peace, happiness, joy, bliss. Yet those words are meaningless. They do not give it justice. For there's much way behind that. You have to experience it to understand it. You have to experience to go beyond cause. Metaphysics teaches you there is a cause for everything. But that's kindergarten. Cause does not exist. There never was a cause. For there would have had to been someone to make the cause, to produce the cause. And of course, most people call that God. So we get into duality, into separation. We say that God made the cause, and we're experiencing the effect. So I ask you, where does God come from? That made the cause? And who made the God? It's all concepts. It's all relative thinking. Do not try to understand this with your finite mind. You cannot. The infinite can never comprehend the finite. Or the finite can never comprehend the infinite. They're two different things. Suffice it to say that you, as you exist now, are complete emptiness. You are pure intelligence, pure awareness, absolute reality, nirvana, just the way you are right now. Do not think about it. If you think about it, you spoil it. Do not try to understand this with your finite mind. You cannot. The infinite can never comprehend the finite. Or the finite can never comprehend the infinite. They're two different things. Suffice it to say that you, as you exist now, are complete emptiness. You are pure intelligence, pure awareness, absolute reality, nirvana, just the way you are right now. Do not think about it. If you think about it, you spoil it. Just the way you are at this moment. You are pure intelligence. Absolute reality. You are the unborn. But every time a thought comes into your mind, you spoil it. When you first wake up, those few seconds between getting up, waking up, just before you wake up, that's when you are in your true state. You just open your eyes and you haven't thought of a single thought yet. That lasts a few seconds. Think about that time. Don't you really feel good in those few seconds before you start thinking about the day's activities? That's reality. Try to catch yourself tomorrow morning. As soon as you open your eyes, before your thought comes, that is your true state, and that is what you are. Forget about your problems. There is a power that knows how to take care of everything for you, if you allow it to. You have to allow it to. You have to surrender your ego, your pride, your concepts, your opinions, your questions, your answers. Everything has to be surrendered. Then the power works of its own volition. A great master said, take no thought of what you should eat, or what you should wear, or where you should go. But seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all these things shall be added unto you. It's the same thing. But how often do you take thought? Most people take thought every moment. You're always thinking, worrying, trying to correct something, trying to figure it out. That's what keeps you from the kingdom of heaven. So what do? Nothing. You do not try to fix anything. You do not even try to change. You simply become yourself, just the way you really are. You leave the world alone. You leave things alone. You leave people alone. So you say, how can I exist? I have to go to work. I have to mix with people. I have to make decisions. Have no fear. You will do all those things. But it will be different. You will understand totally that you are not the doer. Your body came to this earth to do something, and it will do its job. You have absolutely nothing to do with it. Stop fighting. Stop trying to make things happen. Keep your mind on yourself. What do I mean when I say, keep your mind on yourself? Your real self is your heart. Not your human heart, but your spiritual heart. Your heart is God. Keep your mind stayed on God in your heart. If you want to use your imagination to begin with, you can image a sphere of white light in your heart on the right side of your chest, your spiritual heart, and allow all your thoughts to merge into your heart. In other words, do not allow your thoughts to go outward. When your thoughts go outward, conditions take place. When you keep your thoughts in your heart, centered, all of a sudden, you find peace, pure happiness. It comes by itself. Have to allow the power that we don't understand to take care of us. This mysterious power knows what your needs are. I recall when I first saw a picture of Ramana Maharshi in my teens, and I had to go to India to see him. I had no idea why. I didn't have the funds. A couple of months later, my aunt died and left me $14,000. And I left my family and went to India. I don't know why. and it's been like this all of my life. So I've learned to surrender my wants, my desires, my ego to the power that knows the way. And this power will always carry you on a stream of blessedness to your highest good, if you allow it. But you have to become humble, and you have to let go of fear. You do this by the methods we teach, through self-inquiry and becoming the witness. This is called satsang. It means I shouldn't even be talking as much as I do. And just answering questions and talking back and forth. So let's do that now. Express your ideas, ask questions, do something. Share with us some of your experiences.
I have a question, Robert. I understand the concept of surrender, but at the highest level, how could you disallow what's going to, you know, the higher power take over? I mean, how could you say to allow it, but how could you possibly disallow
omnipresence? It appears as if you are. That's all part of the appearance.
As on the mortal plane.
Yes.
But I mean, if everything is unfolding as it should and predestined, on the highest level, you can't disallow it, can you?
You do naturally disallow it, but you hear these words and you no longer react to it. By not reacting, you disallow it. Whereas if you didn't hear the words, you would still be fighting. But now you watch, and you see them falling before your eyes, yet you do not react to it. Before you realize who you are, you're like a mirror, like that mirror over there. And the reflection is taking place. But you are not the reflection. You remain as the mirror. So you do not fight. You do not argue. You do not fear. And you're not overly happy.
Not overly happy?
Yes. Physically.
I don't know anyone who
retailed you. Well, if you won somebody won $48 million in the lotto last night.
Oh.
If you won $40 million, would you be overly happy?
For a while.
That's what I mean. We become overly happy for a while. But if you understand what I'm talking about, all that stuff stops.
My other question.
Papaya sounds good. Okay. Good, yeah.
Well, they are mixed.
They might be kind of sweet.
Papaya pineapple, and the other. What's
the other question then?
Well, my other question is that on a certain level, I accept that we know nothing, and yet I think Arnold brought up the other day the evolutionary process, which has a certain logic to it. Would that be just, I guess that would be just part of a dream, right? In other words, that would be an explanation within a dream.
All explanations are a dream.
That's true, because everything about it didn't exist.
There's no cause.
Yeah.
there's no birth to anything. So there are no explanations. You're wasting time trying to explain.
That's true, because you're explaining the non-existent.
People write voluminous texts about nonsense, about existence. And we read and we get involved and we try to be intelligent about it and we suffer. All suffering stops when you stop searching and you stop fighting.
Yeah.
So Robert, if you're saying that we should be since we really don't know what anything is, and since we don't know who we are, therefore we would be released into a disposition.
Oh,
we would be released. We would, if we don't really know what anything is, and we realize that the self that we think we are is just all conceptual, or it's an illusion, that would automatically release us into a no-self condition.
Into emptiness.
Release, like a releasement. Into emptiness.
But remember, the emptiness is not real emptiness. It's bliss.
It's like a no center. It's not like the regular spiritual paths are always trying to get you to go back to a center, and that keeps you in the self, ego self, you know. But this is like a releasement.
Total release.
Yeah.
Total emptiness. There's no center.
So no center. No center, that's tremendous.
Well, if there was a center, where did it come from? There is no center.
Yeah, and as long as there's thinking, that's the center. We separate ourselves right there.
Exactly.
When we're released, there's no center. There's vastness.
So there's no thought to have no center.
And there's no differentiation between things if there's only...
No discrimination whatsoever.
A release is scary to the ego.
No, it's death. It's death. Nobody wants death. How many people are here? Do you see the whole Los Angeles wandering? Nobody wants it.
This is why I always say in the beginning, I'm just relating my confession, what I feel, the experiences that I've been through. And I ask no one to accept it. But I ask you to work on yourself and see what happens.
Sorry. I have a question about work on the self and self-inquiry and self-observation. About a week or so ago, there were just three of us here, Sam, myself, and Dana. You asked us to speak about what had been happening in our lives. And we all kind of spoke, we all gave a little brief, very positive synopsis of the previous week. Very, very chipper, very up, each one of us. And I've been thinking about that, and I've been thinking about the importance of being positive that you speak of and of projecting the positive. And so I want to just use one little example which will help get to my eventual point, which gets us into literature. I mean, there are two kinds of books. I'd say one is a very famous bestseller type where people go through certain experiences and all ends well and there's true love and all that kind of thing. And people are drawn to that. And then there's, let's say, War and Peace. I don't know how many people have read War and Peace, where you really get involved in life in a way that most literature does not allow us to get involved with, or most experiences. There is the black and white in War and Peace. There is the yin and yang. Tolstoy created a vast world of both pain and pleasure, etc., etc., unlike these other books. So my point is this, now, to get back to what I was saying before. When you read War and Peace, the final experience is one of being moved to a higher reality, of being moved by something beyond oneself. It leads you to something else. Whereas this other literature, although in a temporary sense, appears to be positive, does not. Okay, now to get back to my original point, my original example. We all spoke very positively of our little weeks. We're all good little soldiers, good Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. Was this a valid experience of self-observation? Or was, are we, and this positivism that everybody is mad for in Los Angeles, or was it a distortion? Would it have been better for us in the long run to have said something like, for example, you know, today the morning was hell, this, that, I think was hell, this afternoon I'm feeling better, I can see certain things. In other words, to give an experience of the yin and yang, the black and white, which appears to lead to these higher realms.
You're right. Always be truthful to yourself. Don't put it on. Don't imagine things are going well when they're not. Be free and be yourself. When you're free, you can express yourself positively and negatively. And you have no fear of either one, because they're both the same, as far as the human path is concerned. But when you're not free, you try to hide the negative and accentuate the positive. And as you say, you're making a mistake because you're just fooling yourself. In your subconscious, you're hiding all the negativity.
That's what I feel here very much, and this is particularly true of Southern California, I think, where because of the constant sunlight and all that sort of thing, and people want to have pleasure and they want to be positive, and it's a misinterpretation of what being positive is, it seems to me.
Just like happy faces.
Yeah, it's all happy faces all the time. And the ultimate result, of course, is, as anybody who is honest, we've talked about this, is that people are not happy, really, underneath. It's a surface phenomenon. It's an illusion, again.
But these people are going through whatever they have to go through. This is why when the question is asked, what can I do to change the world and make everybody know the truth, the answer is become self-realized. Because when you're self-realized, that's not a selfish answer. Self-realization means omnipresence. And when you're self-realized, you see the world for what it really is. But when you see it through human eyes, you see suffering, you see good, you see bad, and you think it's true. So your omnipresence of self-realization helps others. Just by being your real self. In the beginning, it appears selfish. Because you're saying, I am and self realized. What about the other people who are suffering? What about the homeless? First become self-realized. And then see what you think of the homeless. You'll have a completely new idea.
That's what Maharshi always says to me. And of course, just do a self-inquiry and the world will appear different.
And that appears strange. It even appears sometimes like a cop-out. Because you say, work on yourself. And you'll help others. How can you do that? But it's true. Because as you know, God is in everyone and in everything. And when you become self-realized, you become God. So you become the self of all. The real self of all is perfection. So when you become the real self of all, you see perfection in everything. And the seeing of perfection, not with your eyes, but with your spiritual self, that perfection causes the perfection to be in others.
But that's a different kind of positivism than just saying, you know, it's just marvelous and it is.
Oh, yes, of course.
And I'm going to be marvelous, you know.
Of course, totally different.
Would you analyze this thing that happened to me yesterday, Emma? What was really going on with this? I went to a party, it was a family party. And I had an experience with somebody else in the family several weeks ago. You know, I used to write books. I used to do quite a bit of writing. Mm-hmm. And this, it happened that I was with these people, and this cousin of mine wrote one of my books, and he finished it, and he threw it on the floor. And this was
really like that.
This was quite an experience. This is a very unusual thing for somebody to do.
I take that as a compliment.
So, so I was with these other family members yesterday, and I wanted to tell this story. I took great joy in telling this story. For one thing, because it was an interesting story to tell, and for another thing, because my cousins were, I could arouse their intense interest, which I enjoy doing. What was I doing? Was this kind of a negative experience, would you say, or was it? I mean, I wanted to do this. I wanted to communicate very much. And also, I wanted to, in this communication, I was relieving myself of the tension of this experience, because I didn't, when it happened, I didn't comment on it to this man who did it. I didn't say anything, because that's a very difficult situation with that married couple. They would not be able to understand anything that I might say. So I repressed everything then. Do you have any comment on
that? Yes. What was the name of the book? Ask yourself, to whom did this happen? And who wants to comment? It's your ego playing all these games. If you were coming from your real self, it doesn't matter. You'd have no feeling for or against.
But since I still am very much involved in the ego, wouldn't it be better for me to, I'm trying to justify my actions, of course, wouldn't it be better?
We have moments of being able to do the self-abiding, you know, it happens, the moments that happen. And then just a moment later, the habits of attention, the habits and things like attention, the consciousness is addicted to these, the habit pattern, and all of a sudden that self-abiding just disappears and we're back in the ego again, in the motions of attention. We can never transcend that ego attention.
Don't say never.
Not never, but it seems it only lasts a very short time, and then by habit we're back.
The attention moving
in the desire, in the me, in the memories, and what, you know, the whole thing again.
Of course. In the beginning this is quite true. But say you're trying to become a surgeon. You have to keep practicing, you make mistakes. That's why you practice on the steps. And dead bodies.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now.
What are you doing?
By myself.
Yes, you keep practicing. You practice again and again and again. You have more steps to practice on until the day comes when you give a perfect operation. Then you become a surgeon. Same principle. You keep catching yourself.
Yeah, it's like a recognition, recognizing when
you keep remembering to catch yourself. And it comes more often, more often.
And that's what the inquiry is helpful
yes.
for. It keeps reminding you what that you're back in me again.
The time lapse becomes closer and closer to reality. And it starts coming closer to it.
It's really interesting because when you're doing even a little bit of self-abiding to some extent, no matter all the things that get you angry, when you're in the ego, they don't bother you, you know, people driving, cut in front of you, and all these, you know, usually you get all tight and contracted and angry, but when you're self-abiding, you're just resting there, that they can do anything, you don't react, you're all released, you're not tense, you know, the day goes smooth.
If you're really doing it, it brings you perfect peace.
Perfect does, yeah.
It really does. So we keep remembering, we'll forget. Then we remember again. Sometimes we'll get disgusted with the whole thing. And we'll stop for a couple of months, who knows. But then we'll go back to it. And if we keep abiding, we'll get there. And become free. But then again, if you don't, that's okay. Because you'll come back again, you'll be at it again.
But the way you're speaking now, it seems like we're going to get there. It seems like we're not there. Isn't it true that we're there? Only we're just distracting ourselves.
Of course, you're distracting yourself.
Yeah.
You can awaken any time.
Yeah. So it's not a goal to be attained, but
no.
It's just to recognize.
To awaken. Just like from a dream. You keep dreaming the same dream until you wake up.
So we're going to wake up to what is already the reality, truth, right here.
Of course. And the only difference about this and the dream is that this appears longer. That's all.
Another difference seems to me that, with rare exception, and I guess you'd call that lucid dream, but you usually aren't trying to wake up from the dream when you have night dreams.
But some people are.
Yeah, and lucid dream you do.
It depends on the dream.
That you're dreaming, but most dreams you aren't attempting to awaken within the dream, and in this dream we are consciously attempting to awaken. So there's a difference there.
I had an interesting dream the other night. I dreamt I was conducting a class, and Queen Elizabeth came in. And she sat down and took off her crown. I just put her hands in her lap. Then I woke up.
That's interesting.
Whatever that means.
Did she? She had a crown. I started asking if she had one of her silly hats on, but no, she
had
a crown.
And she took it off and put it in her lap.
Now, I know that this word is we can't take this word literally, but it's a hard, it kind of leads to a certain conflict. You speak of the great reality, sometimes it's pure intelligence. I think I've made this point before probably more than once. But you use the term pure intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard for me to accept that term and not believe that intelligence leads to something else. Intelligence for us in our current state implies so many other things. So that this intelligence, when you use the word, I mean, I know you mean something more than intelligence.
I mean non-discrimination. Non-attachment. When there's non-discrimination, non-attachment, there's pure intelligence. Of course, you see things as they are.
But doesn't, even in that way, isn't there a suggestion that something develops out of this type of intelligence, that there is some, that it is a pregnant situation?
If you accept it that way. But that's not the meaning. The meaning is just pure intelligence, period. No concepts, no definitions. Non-discriminatory. Nothing you hold on to. It's pure existence. Pure knowledge, same thing. Pure bliss. Those words are all synonymous.
That reminds me of I told you I've been reading Plotinus again. Plotinus says that nothing can be said about the One. No attributes can be given to the One beyond any such thing.
That's true. That's why we call it ultimate oneness. There's no definition.
You can't even call it.
It's not one at all.
One is also a concept.
Yeah.
That's what I call a non-dual. Instead of one, I call a non-dual, but not two.
Or emptiness.
Hey, Rob, I had an idea about it that I think might be interesting. It's really, I think what it is really realization of consciousness. You know, and like, I've been living as realization of mind. You know, me wanting to know, wanting to get realized, you know, wanting to be released. I've been really living as realization of me, realization of mind, of memory, conditioning. I think this whole thing is really coming to rest as realization of consciousness, just consciousness. Not consciousness of anything, but just consciousness. And when that position is held on to, rested in, established in that position, something magical happens.
Yes, you're speaking of no realization. Realization of consciousness is really no realization, because there's no one to realize.
Yeah. No self.
It's called pure awareness.
Same thing.
Same thing. Yeah.
Absolute reality.
But if the Zen Buddhists speak of no mind, that's a common term.
No self, no mind.
Or nirvana. The same thing.
So maybe, Arnold, when you think of pure intelligence, you might think of pure awareness, of pure consciousness.
Why think?
If only we could stop.
Who said that?
My email. Oh, I have a kind of a dilemma that has occurred to me in meditation once in a while, and that is, say it goes on a long time when we're listening to music and the natives grow sort of restless, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, well, who is restless? And I think, as you've taught us, I am, and I think, who is I? But that's contradictory, because the real I could not possibly be present.
Of course not, but when you realize your ego I is, and you follow it to its culmination, you follow it to emptiness, to nothing.
So is it the ego I that we're asking about when we say who is I?
It's the ego I.
And it will just annihilate itself by...
It annihilates itself. You take it to its source, which is nowhere.
Because I thought it for a long time it was the I who is awareness.
That exists by itself. But when you don't know it, then you're talking about the ego
mind. So in self-inquiry, it's when you say who am I, you're talking about
the ego mind.
The little
I. Yeah. And when I play music in between, it's not to make you feel nice listening to music. It's because it gives you the space to watch your thoughts while the music is playing. I see how you respond. See what you do. Always watch. Always be aware. Always watch yourself. Watch how you react. Watch how you think. Watch the kind of thoughts that come to you while the music is playing, while you're meditating. Be aware of all these things. And the more aware you become, the more they disappear. All these concepts start to disappear just by you being aware of them. It's like playing hide and seek. You're trying to find the person who's hiding. So you're trying to find the thoughts that are lurking deep, deep in the subconscious. And they come up by themselves. And you say, I see you. I know you're there. You cannot fool me any longer. The fear is there, I see where you are. And you ask yourself, who fears? Where did you come from, fear? Who is your mother? Who is your father? Who gave you birth? You have no birth. You don't exist. You keep talking to yourself like that. Till that part of you no more exists. And it dissipates of its own accord. That's how you work on yourself. Let's play some more music.
Listen.
And when he says, I need no one or I need nothing and I am free, he doesn't mean that literally. He means he's not attached to people, places, and things. There's quite a difference. You ask, perhaps, how can I have a relationship without being attached? You can have the most beautiful relationship that you can ever imagine. It doesn't mean you become a loner in this path. It means you have friends, you have loved ones, but you give them all the freedom in the world. and you're not attached to their emotions or to anything else. That means total uncommitted love. It's a little different than most people do. Being non-attached means being compassionate, being loving, being kind, knowing what mercy means, helping your friend before you even help yourself. If you're attached, you think of yourself first. But if you're not attached, you think of the other person first. There's a lot to that. Any comments?
No, well, it's of being released from the self. I think instead of calling it self-realization, it should be called a realization that there's no self.
Yeah.
That would be closer to, would it be closer to,
It would be complicated for some people.
Because self-realization, people think, oh, me as a self is going to realize something, but that's absolutely the opposite. You know?
That's what brings them in. That's how they begin.
It brings them in the beginning. If they think the ego is going to get something, it's just the opposite from that. It's losing everything.
Of course.
But it's also realizing that the self is all
But you know, the mind, like the, my mind is such a strange condition because the mind, like the mind is not used to just walking around being released from themselves, you know, instead of, you know, like we walk around like we're always hugging ourselves, like, me, you know, trying to grab everything, you know. And then understanding this and being released from everything, walking around, it's like being a zombie in relationship to what we're used to as a person, educated, and as a child, you know, we're used to, you know, me and the world, you know. It's a very strange condition, and the mind is not, the mind doesn't like it, you know. Kind of have to constantly reinforce to be able to
first experience the condition, then see how strange it is.
Yeah, the zombies, I mean,
it's your natural condition.
Yeah, it's natural, but we're so unnatural.
Yeah.
The self is so unnatural, and that's all we know. So, you know, you glimpse it for a second, and then you run back and grab hold of yourself again, you know?
That's how it happens. That's why you keep working on yourself, working on yourself. You keep remembering what to do until it becomes second nature.
It's almost like floating around, you know. It's so light. There's no tension.
You become light, that's true.
So light is feathered.
Yes.
How do you know
zombies are
not in
place? Well, I've heard they're not. People who become zombies, you know,
so it's like going after, in other words, we have to go to total zero and from the point of the mind. So it's like dying, it's like going to total zero.
Well, isn't that bad, really? What you're doing is just changing your allegiance. Before, you used to have faith in the world and people, places, and things. Now you have faith in omnipresence, in the infinite. And something that you can't feel, taste, touch, smell, or see. And the more faith you have in that, which is yourself, the more faith you have in the world, the real world, as yourself.
It's really, it starts from an act of faith in that.
Faith in the invisible.
In the invisible, so that you go on with it.
You drop your self-importance. And you stop having conflicts with people, places, and things. And you just start loving, you become compassionate, and you realize everybody's your brothers and sisters. And everything happens by itself.
It's like isn't he right to say in a way that it feels like dying, because I think it was St. Paul, one of those, who said, I die daily.
Yes, impossible. You die daily to the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a negative experience. It's a good experience. Every time you let go of something, you feel better.
The self-transcendence.
As an example, say you have a job, and you're worried about being laid off, inflation, pay increases, strikes. But as you begin to understand this teaching, you let go of all those thoughts. You realize that you'll always be at your right place. And no one can take your right place away from you. So wherever your right place is, that's where you're going to be. You subsequently stop worrying about your job, about layoffs, about strikes, about pay increases. And you just do your work without fear. And you become a better worker as a result. So you get promoted, you get a raise, and everything happens by itself. But all fear goes away.
Really amazing, you know, not to be attached to body, mind, and senses, and people, places, and things.
And life goes on. But it goes on the way it's supposed to go on. Naturally. Infinitely. And it's all good.
I think it would make your health improve, but you're not all nervous about
it. It improves you in every way. All parts of your own truth. It's amazing how it works. You stop seeing evil. First you stop seeing evil in yourself. You sort of forgive yourself for all of your mistakes. It's like being born again. And then you can forgive everybody else. Totally, completely. You become free. Uninhabited. And you feel your omnipresence. You realize you're not yourself as a person. You are the self as the universe. It's a grand feeling.
Tell us about the bliss aspect.
Bliss, love, joy, happiness. Those words are all synonymous. But take the happiest experience you can think of as a human being. What's a real happy experience that you've had in your life? An experience that really turns you on. Now compared to bliss, it's not even an atom of bliss. That's a more powerful blessing. It has nothing to do with human happiness. It's a billion times more powerful. It's unexplainable. It's ineffable. Nothing you can even think about. You can just be in it and partake of it. But nothing to explain.
How is it possible to stay conscious of this bliss?
Who's conscious?
I mean, if something is really painful, you lose consciousness. And I would think if something is really unbearably ecstatic, you're also almost, you know...
You're speaking in human terms. That's why they call it transcendental. You transcend human terms. And you're in a completely different space. So there's no one to lose consciousness. You can only lose consciousness as a human being. But if you transcend your humanhood, there's no one left to lose consciousness. There has to be a body to lose consciousness. But when you say, I am not the body, there's no one left to lose consciousness. You follow? To have any experience, there has to be someone left to have the experience. If you get rid of the someone, then you become natural. And you do not lose consciousness by being natural.
So there's no experience anymore.
There's no experience at all.
The one who experiences
is transcendent. It's dead. Exactly.
So realization is not an experience. It's no. Like a primal, the whole primal.
It's not even that. It's beyond that. It's totally transcendental.
You can't experience bliss.
That's right.
You really do feel bliss. I mean, you feel bliss, but there's no. It's not. It's different. It's not the mind experiencing.
It's like the sun trying to experience heat.
That's good.
You can't.
There is bliss, but there's no one experiencing. There's just bliss.
That's a natural thing.
Yeah.
Speaking of the sun, I don't know if this may just be idle speculation, but if you're able to talk, comment on it, I don't know. But there's a teaching that the world, the earth is the logos of the earth, that the earth is an intelligence, that the earth is going through its evolution and is struggling for its own revelations, its own enlightenment. We are part of this greater life. And the same is true of the sun.
Mm.
Do you have a teaching on that?
Just the mental plane. In the mental plane, everything is alive. There's no such thing as dead matter. Everything lives and wants to express itself. The moon, the sun, the earth, the flowers, everything. But when you go beyond that, it doesn't exist. It only exists on a mental plane. But in truth, there is no mental plane. So none of that exists. It's like a dream. Always go back to the dream.
So the whole universe, the solar system and the universe, are a projection in a sense also.
Projection of the mind.
All mind. And all the inner planes too?
All the inner planes. Projections of the mind.
Astral, causal, cervical, all of that?
For whom are these things? Where do they come from? For whom are they? They're all projections of the mind. When the mind goes, everything else goes. So that's why that when you follow the eye is the mind and the ego. When you go to the source, everything is attached to the mind, all the things we've just been discussing. They're all part of the eye thought. I see the sun. I perceive the moon. As you said, I perceive the earth as being alive. I do these things. But when the eye is transcended, who's left? Just itself. And all those things are gone. So there's peace. There's nobody left to worry about those things. Or to concern themselves.
When you say you must go beyond this idea, it reminds me of a line from a book that Mary Fonda was called, he said, "The Secret Teachings of the Tibetan Masters," and one of the phrases that is used, that the Tibetans use, is called going beyond the beyond.
Is that by Paul Brunson?
No, that's by Alexandra David Neal, French woman, who
was
from Tibet.
Was Paul Brunton a realized being?
Yes.
Oh, he was. Because he had that whole series of books.
The Secrets of India, the Secrets of the Jetsons. He wasn't packed up.
She spends a lot of time talking about, oh, it's a very brief book, it's very succinct, which is wonderful, but she speaks about our misconceptions of the self, of being, having any identity at all. She approaches from more of a scientific standpoint, that everything is constantly in flux, although we don't see the changes from moment to moment, but the things that you've said, of course. So we want to hold on to this idea of an identity that simply has no reality. Personal identity.
On the mental plane, everything is in a state of flux. Nothing is solid. Everything moves. but it exists. Because non-duality exists. Duality is when everything is in a state of flux. Things are atoms, there's energy, there are molecules, and there are things. And they're in complete motion. And if you go beyond the molecules and the atoms and the energy, then you have nothing. Emptiness. And that's reality. It's like a story I tell of the monk who was asking the master, what is reality? What is reality? And the master said, go pick a fig. And he picked the fig off the tree. And the master said, open the fig. And the monk did. And the master said, cut open the seed. And he cut open the seed. He said, what do you see? And the monk said, emptiness. And the master said, that's true. Everything comes from emptiness. Because in the fig seed, there's a hole. There's nothing. So out of the nothingness came the fig tree, as well as everything else. Remember, I love you all, and I always think about you. But remember to love yourselves, to pray to yourself, to bow to yourself, to worship yourself, because God dwells in you as you. Peace. See you again next time. God bless.
Yeah. Well, I think you'd like that restaurant. Okay. Anybody else wants to come?
Let's go to the Bodhi Garden.